Kids Like You and Me by O Tempora, read by Hana Nobita. 1. It's been in his head like a chant since the game was called. We won! We won! We won! And Sid's a little drunk and a lot tired, so when he staggers out of the party, it isn't to find somewhere to lie down. Fuck Nash for suggesting that. He outdrank Gino and Gonch both that one time, okay? That totally happened. He just wants to get some air. The metal around his neck is heavier than he'd expected it to be, but it feels good, like lifting the cup. He thinks that maybe it's good in a different way. The metal is heavy with the weight of Canada's expectations, someone had joked, and their tone had implied that it wasn't that funny as much as it was true. He can't remember who had said that. The party is all shifting voices and faces and people touching him and vodka. Flower tried to get him to do jello shots earlier. Some wise-ass had found a maple leaf mold, and even though they were cherry-flavored, Flower had argued that it still counted and Sid needed to do it for Canada. Sid had made an excuse, pulled away, and stumbled out the door. He'd seen Taves duck out at least half an hour ago and hadn't seen him come back in. Sydney had wanted to congratulate him. Maybe suggest another hug to make up for the one on the ice or something. Because Taves had looked put off, as far as he could tell. Sid can deal with it, even though, what the hell? It's not like John had been particularly touchy-feely before. They must be corrupting him up in Chicago. John's on the same team as Kane. John spends a lot of time with Kane. A lot. Of course he's been corrupted. Sid walks around a corner and starts looking for the bathroom. Maybe he'll splash some water on his face. When he hears John's voice, low and emphatic. Winning the cup with you is going to be worth more than this anyways. You and the team. Shut up! You're not my captain right now. You're allowed to be happy about winning gold, Johnny. And that sounds eerily like Pat Kane, even though there's no reason Sid can think of for him to be near the Canadian victory party. Sid walks a little closer and squints. It is Pat Kane, terrible hair and Team USA shirt and all. Silver medal slung haphazardly around his neck. He and John are slumped against each other, backs against the wall and legs stretched out in front of them. Kaner's ankle is crossed over John's, and there's a half-empty bottle of rum nested in between them, probably stolen from the party. That doesn't mean I'm not telling the truth, John says. He isn't looking at Kane, but it doesn't seem like he needs to, not from what Sid can observe. I mean, I'll fucking tell the media that. You keep looking sad all over the place, and I can't... Sorry about my face, Johnny, Kane says, laughing a little. He shifts, and all of a sudden, he's half in John's lap. Sydney blinks. They haven't seen him yet, and he doesn't... Interrupting would be a bad idea right now. That much is obvious even to him. But he doesn't want to leave quite yet. I know you're telling the truth, okay? We got this. It'll be our year. I'm pretty fucking sure of that one. You deserved the win. Though of course it had to be goddamn Crosby with a golden goal. I know you have to like him in the name of patriotism, but... Hey, Sid thinks, indignant. But it's Kaner, so what does he know? Sid and John are totally friends, and not just out of faithfulness to their home country. They have common fucking interests that are not just hockey and Canada. Nova Scotia is different than Manitoba. And yeah... Sid should stop arguing with Kaner in his head. John is laughing, anyways, pulling Kaner even closer, even more on top of him, and starts messing with his hair. Kaner's drinking more of the rum, bottle held loosely in his hand, and John pulls it away from him and takes a swig. Kane's twisted around, watching John's throat move, the curve of his neck as his head tips back. And Sid flushes without knowing why. He remembers hearing something about the two of them cabbing it to the rink together for practice instead of going on the separate buses. And he'd overheard Seabrook and Heath joking in the lockers with John about poor baby Kaner all alone. In addition to something about John not sleeping well without Kaner. But it hadn't seemed... they'd just been teasing for the sake of teasing. And maybe Sydney's the first to put it together like this. The first to even see them like this. He doesn't think Seabrook and Keith would chirp John like that if something serious was going on. And John isn't an idiot. Sid doubts they would have let anyone see them like this if they weren't careless with winning and losing and the weird protective bubble of the athlete's village. But maybe not, and it's just them being codependent. Sid's heard that about Kane and Taves from everyone, other NHL players, and even the Chicago media. And wow, fuck, he needs some water. Or he needs to stick his head in the sink. Or both at the same time. We'll get to host the cup together, John promises, with an undercurrent of something almost vicious in his voice. Not gonna doubt you when you sound like that, Kane laughs. His head is tipped back on John's shoulder now, and from what Sid can see of John's face, John doesn't mind at all. Happy to go back to being captain, Johnny? Not if I have to deal with your dumbass again, John says. Sid is 90% sure that the tone in John's voice means that he's more than happy about it. And Kane obviously can tell, because he's grinning wide the way he was when Parise scored, triumphant and seizing a chance. You should go back to the party, Kane says. They're going to notice that you're gone. Stahl, especially. I saw that smooch, man. Your hockey skills are bringing all the boys to your yard tonight. Fuck off, John says. I don't want to go back yet. It takes Kane a moment to respond, and his voice is almost too quiet for Sid to hear. But he says, Me neither, then. We can stay here if you'd like. I'm not going to be missed for a while. Yeah, John says, taking another sip of rum. They're sprawled on each other now. There's no other word for it. And it's getting to be time for Sid to leave. He can tell that much, before any of this goes too far. He finds John the next morning, eating eggs and drinking coffee and looking like, well, like he'd drunk a lot of vodka, half a bottle of rum, and Fleury's maple leaf jello shots, which Sid is pretty sure he had. Flower was fucking persistent the entire party. Hey, John says, looking up at him. He looks bleary. Morning. Yeah, Sid says, sliding into the chair across from him, and starts picking at his omelet, still faintly nauseous from the hangover. Hey, can I... want to ask you something, if that's okay?
Sure, shoot,
John says, yawning. Can't promise I can be of any help, though. I'm probably not going to wake up until I'm back in Chicago. Or stop being hungover until then. Sid laughs dutifully, but pushes ahead. Nah, it's just... I saw you and Kaner last night. Huh? John looks up, mouthful of eggs. Oh, yeah. We figured since the game was over, we could stop with all the Team Canada, Team USA bullshit. They made us do this stupid video for BHTV, like, me and him had to have popsicle eating contests, which, let's give our Olympians brain freeze, right? That's a good idea. And that's interesting. Either John is better at hiding shit than basically anyone on the planet, or what Sydney had seen was just Kane and Taves being idiots together like normal. But if that's their version of normal, then that too is something to think about. Wait, sorry. So what was the question exactly? John asks, interrupting himself. Sid winces, because there's no way he's going to say this well. Nah, it just looked like... You guys aren't together, right? Like, together, together? John's brows have furrowed, but he doesn't look mad at all. No. Kaner's a cuddly drunk is all. And don't repeat this shit. I'll never hear the end of it if he hears. But he's my best friend, you know? I don't like not playing on the same team as him. As great as the guys were, as great as winning was, that in particular still sucked. Yeah, I get the feeling, Sid says. Better not let that one spread. He sips at his juice, trying to think of something else to say. Though I bet you Kaner already knows. Probably, John says, smiling a little. He doesn't look much like he minds. 2. It barely takes half of the All-Star draft for him to notice that there's something going on, something more than the usual media narrative coming out of Chicago, or at least more than the friendship that the story is based on. And maybe Eric wouldn't say anything, but it's achingly obvious. And with the Hawks being the defending cup team, maybe him bringing it up is just prudent. Except there's no way he's talking to Kaner Taves, since with the way they're acting, that seems like it would be only slightly more productive than banging his head against a wall. So the night before the game, Eric ends up speaking with Patrick Sharp, because Sharp actually plays on a team with the two of them, unlucky bastard, and he's the only Hawk who ended up on Team Stall. Kaner thinks he's funny, eh? He says, passing Sharp a beer. They're in the hotel bar, lots of other players milling around, but neither Taves nor Kane seem to be nearby. Taser's probably cornered Kaner somewhere, dressing him down for not picking him first, Eric thinks. Yeah, little man always does, Sharp says. I have to commend the camera guys for keeping it up in Taser's face each time he wasn't picked, though. It's good to have that on tape. Right, of course, Eric says, taking a pull of his beer. That had been pretty funny, actually, watching Taves seethe and hearing the mics pick up on Kaner laughing about how much he wanted to see Taves sweat. On the other hand, All-Star Weekend would probably be a little more relaxing if he wasn't basically hosting it. He wants Raleigh to look good. It's his home now, as much as Thunder Bay was, and he wants to show it off. You should have heard all the shit Johnny gave Patrick when he got picked as alternate captain, Sharp continues. Eric snorts. I can imagine, he says. I probably would have done it myself. Pat gave as good as he got, for sure, Sharp continues. This sounds awful of me, but they get into screaming fights, right? On the bench or in the lockers. I just sit back and watch. Taser's gotten better at insults over the years, but the one they got into about Kaner getting the A was fucking gold. I'll bet, Eric says. He glances around the bar. Mark has found Jeff and seems to be slipping him illicit shots. From the way Mark keeps glancing over at him and laughing, Eric bets that Jeff is getting an earful of idiotic things my overbearing older brother has done or said over his entire life. Also, did you know that he really likes Nickelback? And no one should be allowed to like Nickelback in this day and age. Jeff's laughing too. Eric's not sure he likes what living in New York has done to Mark. And any chances of Jeff still respecting him even a little have probably gone down the drain. Not that Jeff necessarily respected him in the first place. But hey, he appreciated the illusion. Sharp is following his line of sight, grins, and says, Looks like your brother's corrupting your rookie. You might want to put a stop to that. He's just jealous he doesn't have a cup yet, Eric says easily, and knocks back a shot. Anyways, I just... Let Kaner and Taser know they ought to be careful, eh? There's a lot of media on them right now. You guys are the defending cup champions. I wouldn't want anything to happen, especially not down here. We're still in the South, you know. It's different from Chicago. Not the national media necessarily, but definitely the local press. And things can get ugly once they spread. Hey, Staller. Sharp's face and voice are more serious all of a sudden, and he's got his hand on Eric's arm. Eric sinks back down in his seat. Firstly, thanks, yeah, I'll pass it along. But they're not, as far as I can tell, they're not like that. And I spend half my time on the ice or hanging out getting food with them. They're idiots about one another, for sure. But I don't think... I swear I'm not going to say anything, Eric responds, whether or not there's anything between them. I just thought I should warn you all. They're really not, Sharp says, his face decisive and his voice quiet but firm. Though trust me, I get where you're coming from. You didn't hear this from me, but the amount of denial between those two could make practically anything stop in its tracks. On the other hand, Taser and Kaner, they seem to be comfortable there. So who am I to judge? Well, I don't want it to be some asshole of a journalist pushing them in the right direction, Eric says, just as quietly. It seems to me that's the sort of thing they should have the chance to figure out on their own. I'm with you, Sharp says. Thanks, man. Eric can hear it in his voice. Thanks for coming to me first. While Sharp might treat Kaner and Taser like younger siblings sometimes, and God only knows, Eric knows what that feels like. It's clear that he cares. It'll all be fine, Eric says, as reassuringly as he's able. He's got years of practice using that voice. Behind Sharp's shoulder, Jeff and Mark are getting increasingly red-faced and giggly, and whatever gesture Mark is making in Eric's direction seriously doesn't bode well for him. You probably want to go deal with that now, Sharp says, taking his hand off Eric's arm. I'm going to go find Peaks and Taser, see if I can psych them out about the game tomorrow. Kaner gets an A and gets all cocky. Someone's got to take him down a peg or two. Yeah, you do that, Eric says, smiles one more time at Sharp, and goes to stop Mark from slandering him even more. 3. Tyler doesn't even bother knocking, because this is a serious problem, and it needs to be dealt with right the fuck now. He doesn't trust himself in Swiss malls, not after the first time. He'd tried calling Brownie and Skyping him when that failed, but Brownie is, well, probably still laughing on the webcam about how Tyler's life is like a bad sitcom where the dude doesn't know how to do basic household chores. It's a sad cliche. Brownie's words exactly. But fuck that. Half of what he owns is now pink. Streaky pink, too. So it's not like he can rock some badass magenta, which he happens to know complements his skin tone, so it wouldn't even be lame and unfashionable. Kaner, get the fuck off Netflix. I need your mom... Tyler blinks, looking at the scene in front of him. Kaner, lying sprawled out on the bed, one hand on his stomach, the other balancing the laptop and a bottle of some weird Swiss beer beside him. Johnny Taves is on the screen, and that's the interesting part. Because while Kaner's in a ratty t-shirt and flannel boxers, Taser is shirtless. Tyler squints. Wearing underwear, maybe? But definitely shirtless, and holding a bottle of something that looks alcoholic and expensive. There's nothing wrong with Skyping shirtless. He does it all the time. But Johnny Taves? Seriously, man, Tyler's life is undergoing all sorts of paradigm shifts today. Sup, bro, Tyler says, nodding towards the webcam. Taves looks pissed, but, like, that's his default expression, right? Tyler had peeked at Kaner's phone a while back, and it had been all texts from his sisters, a few from Sam Gagne, some baby pictures from Patrick Sharp, and then a million texts from Taves angrily complaining about the lockout. Kaner being in Switzerland, and not in Chicago suffering through the lockout with him, having to do pressers with Crosby, the asshole NHL talking suits, all topped off with some about the weather. Tyler sympathizes. There's a reason he isn't helping with the negotiations, not the least of which is that they probably don't want him there. But, like, he's pretty sure that the shit Taves is talking is excessive, and he's the one to judge here. That totally means something. Sagan, Taves says, nodding back. I forgot Pat gave you a key. He sounds super disapproving, but he also has nice abs. So Tyler figures he can take a moment to absently admire them. In his informed opinion, his own abs are so much better, Although he's seen a couple of the Hawks' post-game interviews, and Taser has a fucking great ass. This is probably not a good train of thought to have when the man is virtually in front of him and looking annoyed with Tyler's existence. And you know what? Tyler does not want to be that guy who cockblocks his bro's Skype sex, since Kaner and him are totally bros now, and Tyler never wants to be that dude. He turns his attention back to Kaner. At least Kaner is relatively clothed. Wait, you need my mom? What the fuck kind of messed up thing is that? Kaner yells, sitting up on the bed like the pure horror has taken a moment or two to process. Taves is glaring at Tyler through the power of the internet, and Tyler really doesn't need their freaky double act right now. He has actual problems. Hey, man, no way! Nothing like that. It's that I fucked up the laundry, and now most of what I own is pink. And not that I couldn't rock the pink, but it looks really sketch. I know your mom does your laundry. I need her tips. And maybe some bleach for my muscle shirts. Did you do the laundry drunk? Kaner asks curiously. Because that's never a good idea, Segzy. Yeah, you still owe me a new Coldplay shirt, Tave says, butting in. Maybe that's why he's shirtless, Tyler hypothesizes. Because Kaner ruined his shirts, and now he has no choice but to lounge around without them in what appears to be a pair of indecently tight boxer briefs. Fuck you, Kaner says in the direction of his computer. My mom's out right now, but I'll let her know that you need help when she gets back, okay? Yeah, thanks, Tyler says, scratching at his stomach. Sorry to interrupt your party, dudes. We are just talking about Johnny's refusal to read The Hunger Games. Not a big deal, Kaner says easily. You talking to the other Tyler sometime tonight? I asked him for laundry advice, but I think he's still laughing at me, Tyler says morosely. He made me promise to leave the call open so he could make fun of me more once I finished up here. I do so much for him, and it's all take, 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 you know? I'd make fun of you too, Tave says. He doesn't sound very funny, and Tyler says so. That's Johnny kicking you out of my bedroom, Kaner says, unconcerned at his BFF being a total freak show. I gotta win this debate. Katniss Everdeen's honor is at stake. We'll do breakfast tomorrow, though, for sure. Tell Brown hi from me. Sure thing. See you, Tyler says, and makes his escape, careful to close the door and lock it behind him, which, honestly, Kaner should have done that in the first place. He goes back to his room, and Brownie's still laughing. I can't believe you did that, man. I knew you were dumb, but this is just great. And it comes out before Tyler can think better of it. Look, it's been a stressful day for him. He's so fucking glad Taves isn't his captain, since he's pretty sure Taves motivates the Hawks by glaring at them like he's planning to cut off their dicks if they don't get points up on the board. You ever hear anything about Kaner and Taser? Tyler asks. Brownie laughs again. Just the same media shit everyone hears. You've probably heard more about it than me. You're like buddying it up with Kaner over there. Have you guys planned a romantic trip to Paris yet? I think if we did anything that could be misinterpreted that way, Jonathan Taves would straight up beat me to death with a hockey stick, Tyler says. Dead serious. Brownie laughs anyways. I'm not fucking around here, babe. Do you want to be eulogizing me at such a young age? Like we didn't know Taves was a weirdo, Brownie says eventually, once he stopped cackling at Tyler's general existence to breathe. Hey, so I put your care package in the mail. You did? Tyler is genuinely fucking touched. Brownie is his boy. Aw, man, that's awesome. I'll let the rest of it be a surprise. But guess what? I sent you Easy Mac. He'll put Jonathan Taves and his death glare out of his mind for now. At least until the Hawks play the Bruins. And hey, that might not even happen this season. 4. What the fuck? Andrew says when Kaner comes walking into the locker room, stitches above his lip and looking jet-lagged to hell. You didn't even bring me any Swiss chocolate, man? It's like all that love we shared last season went poof, and now it's totally non-existent. Uh-huh. Tell it to me when I'm not mentally in another time zone, Kaner says, yawning hugely and sitting down on the bench.
And all of the chocolate I brought back is for my sisters.
It isn't going to make you any taller, Mutt. Hey, Andrew says. Kaner grins and bumps shoulders with Taser, sitting next to him. And it feels so familiar, so that for a moment or two, it's like the lockout didn't happen at all. Except he's called up for the whole season, and even if it's shortened, it's still NHL hockey, and if Andrew hasn't been able to stop beaming since the announcement was made, whatever, no one here is going to blame him at all.
Yeah, well, your face, Andrew continues.
It's a valid point, he feels. Kaner has stitches in his lip and is so far past needing to shave. I don't know, Shazer. I think it's an improvement, Taser says, and starts lacing up his skates. You ready?
Ready as I'll ever be, Andrew says.
He knows he's lucky, because at least he got to play in Rockford during the lockout, and hockey was hockey. A lot of guys didn't even get to do that. They all saw the articles about Sidney Crosby sneaking into street pickup games. But it's so good to be back. Practice goes well, and when Taser and Kaner disappear off with each other afterwards, no one even blinks. Andrew figures they're all just glad everything is back to normal. He goes over to Taser's for pizza and video games the next night with Letty, Sod, and some of the other guys. And it turns out Kaner's been there for hours, chopping vegetables and bugging Taser about buying the right type of hummus. There aren't that many types of hummus, Sharpie points out. Kaner chucks a piece of broccoli at his head. And overall, apparently bothering Taser in the way where it's obvious Taser's really glad he's doing it. They hadn't been like this so much last season. Not where Andrew could see. It could have been because of the concussion or the lines moving around. But whatever it is, it's, well, it's kind of weird. It's what everyone told him about, but he hadn't really seen it, only caught glimpses here and there, and he'd always felt like he was intruding. Now it's comfortable, out in the open, and the other guys seem pretty relieved to see them delighting in their bromance, or whatever people are calling it these days. Andrew doesn't think that's the right term for Kaner and Taser. What the fuck? Letty says to him after demolishing two things of hummus. Kaner is over on the couch, fist-pumping triumphantly. Andrew's not sure why he ever thought the guy was a role model. This is a level of bromantic you don't see in Jude Apatow movies. Dude. Andrew thinks for a minute. It's not really, but we're hockey players, he says. Like, Dunks gave Siebes his teeth. But they're D-men, Letty points out. That makes it not weird. True, Andrew allows, and goes to get another slice of pizza. He ends up getting cornered by Sharpie and a cell phone full of baby pictures, which, of everyone crowding up Taser's living room, their host is playing Siebes in Mario Kart and losing terribly, despite some really obvious cheating. Andrew knows basically only Kaner wants to spend half an hour hearing stories about Sharpie's daughter getting hilariously mad when she couldn't pull herself off the floor to standing. He says as much to Sharpie, who laughs and pats him on the shoulder. I sent all these to Peaks when he was in Switzerland, Sharpie says. I figured he would need something to do in between corrupting Tyler Sagan and reading teen romance novels. Andrew sees Taser's shoulders twitch at the mention of Tyler Sagan. Sexy didn't need any corrupting, and hey, fuck you! I played hockey, too! Kaner yells over at him, readying another vegetable to use as a projectile against Sharpie. Taser turns on some weird sixth sense and pushes it out of his hand. Stop trying to use my apartment as a staging scene for a food fight. You have your own, he says. Siebes takes advantage of it to run him off the road. Fuck! Taser groans, tossing the controller down. Patrick, hey, look what you made me do. I think it's time to accept that you suck balls at video games, Kaner says easily. Don't even try to blame it on me. Like you're not at my place trying to beat me at Wii Golf and bitching about the coffee I buy all the goddamn time. Whatever, Taser says. But he doesn't challenge Siebes to a rematch.
Weird as fuck, Letty mouths to him.
Andrew... Okay, Andrew kind of has to agree. And then they win. And they keep winning. And it's great. They're on fucking fire. Kaner scores, and so does Taser, and so does he, and everyone's feeling good about the season. Tentative, because God only knows that there's still room for stuff to go wrong. But really, really good. It's when they're in Columbus, and there's snow everywhere, that Andrew gets bored of watching the three TV channels that are getting through, and like, he definitely supports PBS and their mission, but a man can only take so much. And Kaner keeps bugging him to read The Hunger Games, so he decides that maybe now is the time. Kaner's room is two doors down from his, and it's not too late, so he figures that he could just go in and get the book and hopefully ignore all the pages Kaner had dog-eared so he could remember his favorite parts. Hey! Andrew says, banging on the door. Kaner, dude, let me in! When no one answers, he shoves at the door with his shoulder. It's open, and he's positive that he has the right room number. He'd watched Kaner go in earlier. He'd made some crack about how Taser wouldn't be able to sleep well without him. But Kaner isn't in there. His bag isn't either. Either they're missing a hockey player, which is unlikely, or... He's hiding in Johnny's room, says Dunks from behind him. Andrew jumps. What the fuck, man? He says. Dunks shrugs. You looked like it was something important. Not really, Andrew says. I just wanted to borrow a book. Since I can't watch any more PBS, I'm going to go insane. PBS is great, Dunk says. But yeah, for sure. He turns to walk back to his room, and Andrew hurries after him. What, Schauser? Do I not want to go into Taser's room? Do you care if you see him doing push-ups in his underwear? Andrew shakes his head. He's probably letting Kaner annoy him. Or they're arguing over something. You know how they are. They enjoy it. And they've been doing it for years. And you know how people get about routines. Don't worry about it. Dunks pats him on the shoulder, which is less reassuring than it should be, and walks off somewhere to do something. Andrew really isn't sure. Okay. So Kaner and Taser are weird. Down to the fact that Kaner apparently ditched his own shiny CBA-approved single room. Whatever. He's playing hockey. He's going to be here for the full season. Whatever works, right? Shazi can definitely deal. He's still not going into Taser's room, though. He doesn't want to think about what he expects to find. 5. Patrick figures it out when Johnny meets him in the airport and offers to carry his duffel. No, that's a lie. Patrick begins to figure it out when Johnny meets him in the airport, offers to carry his bag, and spends the entire drive back to Patrick's place asking him leading questions about Switzerland and what exactly it was like living in close proximity to Tyler Sagan. And yeah, he and Sex are bros now, and it was great to have him there, but Johnny only saw him on that one Skype call. Segs is normally way more chill when he's not freaking out about failing at doing his own laundry. He says that to Johnny, and Johnny just snorts and suggests they go get hamburgers, which Patrick definitely supports, even though he can tell he's going to have jet lag like a bitch really fucking soon. And then you can fix your goddamn hair, Johnny says. And Patrick rolls his eyes and suggests that Johnny is going to be paying for lunch. Okay. So he realizes it halfway through their meal, when Johnny's ankle keeps brushing up against his, and Johnny's eyes seem like permanently affixed to his mouth. My lip is seriously fine. I promise you don't need to obsess over it, Patrick says. Do you think I'll get a cool scar?
No, I think you'll look like even more of a dumbass, Johnny says, and smirks a little. But his eyes are weirdly soft, almost gentle. And in the years Patrick has known him, Johnny has always committed 100% to his smirks. Johnny doesn't do gentle like that. Because he's a good person, and also doesn't want to make Johnny spaz out in the middle of a hamburger joint, Patrick waits until they're in his apartment before pushing Johnny up against the wall and kissing him. He makes it a good kiss, too. Not too much at first. No tongue. But he presses one hand to Johnny's hip and wraps the other around the back of his neck and fits them together as best he knows how. Because Patrick means this. And if that doesn't come through, then he's fucked. Johnny doesn't kiss back at first. It's only a momentary hesitation, but Patrick feels panic spike in his stomach. And then Johnny commits to it full-heartedly, exactly like how he commits to everything, sliding his hands over Patrick's back and pressing him close, wrangling their heads into the best position. And it is glorious. It's everything Patrick thought he could want and more. And it takes a huge amount of willpower for him to pull back so they can talk for a moment instead of straight out grabbing Johnny's ass. For the record, he really wants to grab Johnny's ass. Johnny blinks at him, slack-jawed yokel face out in full force, his eyes impossibly dark, and says, "How did you even know?" "Like you'd ever carry my bag without an ulterior motive," Patrick says. Johnny laughs. "Yeah, okay," he says. "I definitely wouldn't." "But, like..." Patrick takes a deep breath. "I missed you a lot. Probably more than I should have, you know? You're my best friend, but..." "But we're not best friends," Johnny says. "I think we've been something more for a while. You just had to take off for Switzerland for it to get through." "I was finding viable employment. Dude," Patrick protests. "You're the one who made Segs think that you full-on hated him just because he wanted help with laundry." It feels stupidly good to be touching Johnny again. Not that they didn't before. They touched all the time. But it's charged now. Little sparks of electricity. The best kind of static shock. "I'll apologize to him," Johnny says. "Maybe." Patrick pokes him in the rib. "You were the one I was coming home to, dumbass," he says. And Johnny's smile is brilliant and blinding as the sun. Plus one. Sharpie walks in on them making out in Johnny's hotel room after they play Columbus, halfway through March, and starts the slowest, most sarcastic clap Patrick has ever heard. 6 fucking years, he says. "Or at least I hope so, because if this is a thing back in 2011, you both owe me, since I had a really fucking weird conversation on your behalf with Eric Stahl for nothing." "It wasn't," Johnny says, pulling away from Patrick, who definitely does not let out a groan. They both have the beginnings of beard burn. He can feel it. And Patrick touches his hand to his mouth, which is probably swollen and very, very red. "Congrats. I'm happy for you. Please lock your door from now on," Sharpie says. "No one wants to see Taser grabbing your ass, Peaks." "Fuck you. I'm bootylicious," Patrick says, and looks down to where Johnny is actually grabbing his ass. "Whatever. You're the one who stole our room key." "This is true," Sharpie admits. "Although it's fair to say no one would have... Actually, no. Everyone would have expected this. I don't know what I was thinking." He looks at Johnny. "You went to college. You should have picked up on this faster." They've had that conversation. The "we are both idiots who could have been banging for years" conversation. But Sharpie doesn't need to know that. "We're making up for lost time now," Johnny says, voice bitchy, and squeezes Patrick's ass. Patrick yelps and presses into him, feeling Johnny hard against his thigh. That must have been Johnny's aim all along, because he's smirking horribly at Sharpie and looks like he's about to go for Patrick's neck. With his teeth. Patrick has nothing but positive feelings about that series of events, but he doesn't really want to put on a show for Sharpie, who already has enough on them to tease them for years. "Yeah, no, I'm gone," Sharpie says, but because he's a dick, he yells, "Use protection!" as a parting shot, and it echoes down the hall. Patrick shrugs and sticks his hand down Johnny's sweats, cupping him through his boxers. That gets him a full-body shudder, like the feeling of touching, like this is still new, still surprising. He thinks it's going to be like that for a while. "Hey," Johnny says, and kisses him again, hard and perfect, his hand skimming the waistband of Patrick's pants, then dipping under, pushing them and his underwear down. They get kind of tangled around Patrick's knees, and he kicks them off, trying not to trip. "Hey," Patrick responds, and he knows what Johnny's trying to say, even if he isn't going to say it. "Me too, you loser, okay? Me too. So you should take your shirt off now." "Okay, yeah, okay," Johnny breathes, smiling, and does. He drops to his knees. "Shit," Patrick says, and leans forward, and Patrick has to remind himself how to stand. "We could go to the bed," he says. "Nah." Johnny's got an eyebrow raised, challenging. "I think this is more fun." And then his mouth is on Patrick's dick. And they've done this a couple of times before, but there's pure sensation running up his spine, and it takes all Patrick has in him not to come. "Unfair," he says, but he doesn't really mind. Johnny hums, and maybe it's supposed to be a yes, but it's also inescapably filthy in the best way. Johnny's got one hand on the base of his cock, and he's got it coordinated with the movements of his mouth. His other hand is gripping Patrick's hip like a lifeline, and Patrick's resolve is just gone, sunk. Johnny can make fun of him for not lasting. It'll be totally worth it. He comes, his hand clenched in Johnny's hair, and sinks down to the floor, Johnny grinning like the smug asshole he is. "Fuck you," he says, and Johnny's grin gets even wider. "Maybe later, if you can get it up again," he says. Patrick groans feelingly, smacks Johnny's ass for luck, and pulls them both over to the bed, plotting his payback. Several weeks later, Johnny gets a text from Sidney Crosby that says, "Took you long enough. Please don't tell me anything about it." He's not sure what or who tipped Sid off, but he laughs anyways.